Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
I know that some of you will remember his name, Jeff Small. If you see him, I know you'll remember his face because he used to be a reporter on KSDK News Channel 5. He has now completed his time in the St. Louis Circuit Court drug program. Jeff Small is a guest with us this evening on KMOX Profiles.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Jeff, welcome to KMOX.
Thank you so much for having me.
There's a lot in that intro. I could have gone a lot of different directions, right. You know, where how you grew up and where you went to school. And right. But for those of us who watch Channel 5 and watched you as a reporter, and then the next headline we see is arrested, that is now a part of your story.
It is.
If you will. How it does is. That make you feel to hear you introduced that way?
I have so many flashbacks, like, you know, just 2 years ago, in fact, January 2018, I think it's the beginning of January 2018, I had, you know, if you pull up my name, if you Googled my name, it would say, you know, Emmy Award-winning reporter, you know, Channel 5, it mentioned my work in Ferguson during the unrest, you know, I was the media relations spokesperson for that, great things. And then after mid-January, you do that same Google search for my name. Now it says former reporter arrested in a meth bust or meth arrest. And my mugshot was there.
Yeah. I thought you looked so sad.
Oh, I looked the way I was, which was, I use the word almost empty.
Mm.
Because my eyes were bloodshot. I was high. I was very high at that time. You know, I just, you know, I guess I looked to myself disheveled. It's looking at it now. I wasn't even able to look at it for a long time.
Right.
Could not. And now, I mean, I can finally look at it and say, wow, that was then. That was then.
This is now.
Person, right?
Right. So let's go way back before 2018, mm-hmm. January 2018. Mm-hmm. How long had you been at Channel 5, and where were you before right. you became a reporter here in St. Louis?
So I did stints in Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, and went to school at Jackson State, and I kind of had one of those kind of strange trajectories in that I didn't go to school for journalism. I went to school for criminal justice.
Oh, really?
I wanted to be in the FBI at one point. You know, volunteering in my college at a radio station, TV station. Somebody literally offered me a job in TV. Said, you look great. You got a great voice. We think you do well in TV. That's how I got started. And, you know, and it was full speed ahead.
And what year did you graduate from Jackson State?
Would have been 96.
Okay.
96.
I'm trying to peg your age. I have
right.
no idea. I have no idea how old you are.
I'm 46.
You're 40? Oh, my gosh. 46.
Yeah.
Then those of you who you'll see pictures of Jeff Small attached to this interview at KMOX.com, and you will see that he in no way looks 46. You probably still get carded. If not for the mustache and the beard.
Right. No, I've always had a youthful look, and I guess it has played to my strengths.
Right.
And so back in the day, I think I was moving every 2 years, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
That,
what
that
did you love story. About it?
You know, I think I was always a great writer, you know, not attached to a career, but growing up, I was, you know, I at one point, I think in the eighth grade, I had my own comic book. I used to draw.
God. You were creative.
I was creative. I was in the theater. I sang. I mean, so I was, you know, my brother was always the I don't call him a nerd, but he was the bookworm. He,
yeah.
You know, kind of had two friends, and he's good. I probably had 200 friends. I was the extrovert. And I read the newspaper as a kid. I could talk to a wall as a kid.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I was that kid. I always had an adult vocabulary. So my mother, knowing myself, really never knew quite what I was going to do. But my mother said, you're going to be something. You know, just, yeah, we'll figure it out. You know, you'll figure it out. I used to have crazy hair. I mean, I was much different.
He has no hair now, which you haven't in a while.
Right, yeah. Right.
You carry the bald head well.
Yes, thank you. But yeah, so I did Jackson State.
So you're a total artistic person.
Yeah, yeah. That's me by nature. And so, and television was just kind of one of those things, like a performer, a singer, or a famous dancer. You know, when you get on stage, or when I was on television, when that red light would come on, I was on. And yeah, I got nervous, but a controlled nervous, nervous, that energy. I was in my zone, in my element.
I seem to recall that you see, when I would watch you, that you were, it's totally engaged. Mm-hmm. You had a certain an energy level about you, and that you were a storyteller.
Yes, yes. I absolutely. One of the things that I think I most enjoyed about being on television and being able to tell those stories is that I think that I was always so good at meeting people where they were. And that would be, you know, if it was sitting on a porch with grandma, you know, talking about whatever, sometimes some very, very difficult stories. Mm-hmm. I was able to do that just like the next day if I came in, we were going to talk to the president out at the airport. I could do that too. And being able to definitely, you know, swing between those two elements and tell some good stories from a people perspective.
Right.
You know, I think I was just, you know, I wanted to get the story. I was competitive because that's by nature.
You have to be,
in
right?
Industry, right. But I think there's so many people I remember, you know, who would call me afterwards or text, you know, or send me a message and said, thank you for not just telling my story, but the way you told the story, the way you made my family feel, the way you treated me with some dignity. Even, like I said, you know, and so many opportunities. If I got a call or a letter, somebody said, hey, will you come speak to my kids? Will you come speak to my school? I mean, I literally, the only time I turned something down is if I didn't have time. But literally, I was everywhere and enjoyed it. I mean, yeah. I just enjoyed it because I remember always seeing, you know, kids come up and say, oh, I look up to you. I was a young black male on mm-hmm. television. I always liked to dress nice. So I prided myself on, you know, being a pretty snazzy dresser. And that many people gravitated toward that just to say, well, you're always sharp. And that alone was fun, I guess you'd say, to me.
Did you have, once you got into it and you're moving every 2 years, you're clearly moving up, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What was the dream?
I wanted to anchor the news. I was a reporter, and I did, you know, some weekend anchoring and stuff like that. But at my job, before I came back to St. Louis, I was a main anchor. Small station, small city, but I was a main anchor. And that, I definitely wanted that position at some point. And then from there, I knew I wanted to get back to St. Louis because, you know, everywhere else I'd been, I literally went and didn't know a soul.
Yeah.
I wasn't making any money. I, you know, it was just go for this dream, just make it happen. And I made it happen. But at those times, I was sending tapes back to my grandmother, sending tapes to my mom. Yeah. No, I'm really on television. I swear I'm on TV, you know, because they had never seen me. And so the dream was to get back to St. Louis. And ironically, Karen Foss, the St. Louis legend,
right.
I met Karen Foss at a broadcasting conference I went to. And we hit it off very well. And she said, you know, if at some point I can be of some help to you, let me know. And I called her up on it. When I was ready, I you know, I don't know if I sent her an email or whatever, maybe a snail mail letter at that point. But, you know, say, hey, I would love to come to St. Louis if you can help me. I'm more than willing to do whatever. And long story short, she helped me and I got the job here. And it was just, it was on. It was, I you know, because, yeah, I'm from here. I'm even from Alton, Illinois, so small town in this area. So, you know, my third grade teacher, my old friends knew. I mean, this is a big deal for me.
I would imagine that makes it even more difficult to endure the fall. And our guest on KMOX Profiles tonight is former Channel 5 reporter Jeff Small, who, when you hear that name and see his picture, you may remember that 2 years ago he was arrested on drug charges. I believe that's off your record now because you completed the drug court, right?
It's all gone.
We're going to talk about the fall next
now,
on KMOX Profiles.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
I was so excited when Jeff Small reached out to me to say he wanted to tell his story. And I said, can you come like tomorrow? Can you come tonight? And so he is with us in studio on KMOX Profiles. You'll remember Jeff Small reporting on Channel 5. How long were you a reporter there?
I was there 9 years.
That is a very long time.
It is.
Was this the last stop? You had moved every 2 years?
Yeah.
So you were intending to stay here?
Yep, I was. Very much so. And I was the weekend anchor. You know, so I was moving up in the ranks.
I was
a reporter. I was a weekend anchor for the last 2 or so years before I was not, because they pulled my weekend anchor spot.
Right.
But yeah, this is I was going to be here for the long haul.
What was it like coming? Because there are a lot of reporters here who come home,
mm-hmm.
and St. Louis likes to claim its homegrown talent.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like working in your hometown? Where did you go to high school?
Right. So I graduated from Cardinal Ritter.
Okay.
We moved after my sophomore year of high school. So from Alton High School for freshman and sophomore year. Then because it was such a big move, my graduating class in Alton might have been 600 or so when we moved here. Obviously uprooting a teenager.
Yeah.
Their
that's
junior
hard.
Year of school. My mother was, bless her heart, sweet enough to sacrifice to send me to a small private school where my graduating class, I believe, was 56.
My goodness.
So that helped a lot. Again, testament to my mom for agreeing to do that, because that was kind of my, if I can make a stipulation, that was kind of my plea to my mom, like, help me make it a little easier.
Yeah.
Let me make some friends at least. And so went to Cardinal Ritter, and instantly it was, it was a college preparatory school.
Yes.
And so it's
well known for sending everyone to college.
Yeah.
Most to college.
Correct.
Yes.
I had no choice but to, the bar was set so high when I walked in that door, it was like, oh, okay. I guess I got to study. Okay. I guess I have to, really get serious about this.
And be of service.
Thing.
Cardinal Ritter is all about teaching its young people to be of service.
Yep. By all means. It was one of the best things that happened in my life. Very much so. Yeah, Cardinal Ritter was awesome. And then, but to your question, though, I mean, it was, I didn't know what it was like to be a local celebrity. But instantly, when I was on Channel 5, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it was about me or whatever. But, man, I would go places and literally, just especially when I started anchoring, man, aren't you that guy? Aren't you that guy? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, whether I was shopping, whether I was out to eat, signing autographs, and again, being from your hometown. Yeah, it was.
And being
was awesome.
Good. Now, you
and
could,
being,
I mean,
well,
you would be terrible.
Right.
You wouldn't have lasted 9 years if
Correct.
You had not been
Correct.
Talented.
Correct.
And so is Karen Foss continuing to mentor you?
We've not spoken, certainly not since
I mean,
this
when
period.
You were there at.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
During,
so,
yeah, those 9 years.
Right. When I was at Channel 5, especially in that first part, it was still the kind of familiar names, Deanne Lane and Karen Foss. And,
Sharon Stevens.
Yes. So, I mean, like, kind of the who's who, when I walked in the door, I mean, and that alone was pretty awesome, I guess, and slightly intimidating, walking in the door. And here I am, this young guy from these small market stations. And here I come in the door and I'm literally working side by side with Karen Foss and the big wigs who didn't treat me any different. They,
wow.
I was a colleague now, and we were sent on the same big stories. We covered.
I mean, what, 30-ish?
Yeah.
30.
Right.
A baby.
Yeah. and I was right there with him. I by the time, I think by 2006 or so, I had 2 Emmy Awards under my belt, which again was, wow. For me, I didn't go to school for this. It's like, totally a dream.
But your social justice degree, or so, not social,
criminal
I mean,
justice.
Not social justice.
Criminal what was justice. Your,
criminal justice,
mm-hmm.
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly helped you.
Yeah, it did. I mean, for a long time, you think, wow, what a waste. But, I figure, because being in a big city where a lot of big city problems occur.
Yeah.
You're nothing in particular about St. Louis, but it's a major city. Major city has major problems, from crime and crime-related stories that we tended to cover a lot. Those are many times the big story of the day. And so, covered it all. And I do think it helped in many ways.
Up until this point, had you ever done drugs before? Other than the marijuana that everyone has smoked?
And here's the thing. What's perhaps funny to some, I didn't, growing up, didn't smoke. I drank, but didn't smoke, didn't ever pick up the marijuana thing. I think I tried it a couple of times at some point way back when, didn't like it. That was never my thing. And was totally against drugs. I mean, I covering the news, I mean, I covered horrible stories related to drugs. And you know, I would see different things like, oh my God, I would never. I was around during my college years and in some of those small market stations. I was around drug activity-ish, or you know, people I know were using drugs, and they would even shield me from it. They're like, Jeff, hey, you don't, this ain't for you. You go over here, man. This ain't your thing. And so I went, you know, and I didn't want to get involved. Never turned my nose up at it, but I didn't think that would ever be me. And then, you know, it was probably in 2005 that I was introduced to cocaine. And I think one of the things that I fell into, and like this trap, is that because of the circles that I was now running into, being a local celebrity, just being around the movers and shakers, people with money, people with influence, I saw how cocaine is kind of looked at as the bougie drug, the fancy drug.
It's not crack. Crack, poor man, black man, inner city. Correct. Cocaine is the attorney, the judge.
Yep.
Yes.
And I've done drugs with all those people.
My goodness.
There were times when...
Professionals.
Professionals, high-profile people. I remember one particular occasion, which I'll share more about, but it was an endless supply of cocaine. I think it came out maybe on a gold platter.
In St. Louis.
Oh, yeah. And matter of fact, this was the night, I believe this was a Christmas Eve in St. Louis, and I had to work Christmas Day. I don't remember if I was anchoring that next day or reporting, but I know I didn't get any sleep. I had been up the entire night doing cocaine, and because it was a never-ending supply. It just kept, when we thought it was running out.
How many people are in this?
To that occasion, I believe it was three or four of us.
Are you in a house, a condo?
In an apartment, and the person whose home we were at, apartment, he was the supplier, and I think... I never seen that much cocaine, but again, it was a nice environment. It was.
We have to take a break. Mm-hmm. I when Jeff and I were coming up on the elevator together, I said I've got like 1,000 questions, and I am not, and I know you guys probably have them as well. And so many people listening to this, I'm sure that you know someone. So many of us know someone who you thought not them. But it turns out it was them who got caught up in whatever, whether it's gambling or drugs, sex trafficking. You'd be amazed how many people are stripping and doing prostitution on the side. It's just remarkable what people you think wouldn't do are actually doing. And we're going to continue our conversation with Jeff Small, who is now clean.
Yes.
And this is only 2 years ago, so it's been a remarkable journey for him. We'll take a quick break and come back with more on KMOX Profiles.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
We are back with Jeff Small, Christmas Eve.
Yes.
Endless supply of cocaine.
Yep.
You say that you in St. Louis had done this drug, bougie drug, as you put it, high-profile people.
Yeah.
All kinds of professionals.
Yeah.
How were you introduced? Did someone come to you and say, I've got something for you? Are you at a party and it comes out? What happened?
I think back then, I think it was at a club, or clubs that we were at. We were bar hopping, I believe. And, I've seen people do it.
In a club?
Yeah. In the bathroom, taking turns going to a bathroom.
Okay.
Which happens, all around the world. That's one
right.
of the things. Yeah.
Right.
But the bathrooms, people taking turns. I'm like, well, what are y'all doing? And you know, they're telling me what they're doing, and you know, it's blow. It's not even cocaine. It's called, you know, the little blow. So it does, you know, again, these things that
wow.
make it
so
not
that word
seem
is
so bad.
Used.
Yeah.
First of all,
yeah.
I thought there's 1970s. Right. It was called blow.
Yeah,
okay,
doing a little blow, and you know, and they're having their drinks and seem to be having fun, and I guess you know, after a while, curiosity got the best of me, and so I wanted to try it, and I tried it, and I loved it. Loved the feeling. Had the extra energy and, yeah. and, you know, we were having a great time. And, you know, at first, I think the first period of time, I don't know, maybe a month or so, it was free. It was available, you know, just, hey, come try it, you know. And then fast forward, I became a customer.
Yeah, that's how they say
it works.
Work.
And also, very shortly after I started doing it, you know, at the clubs or just in this nightlife, then I want it all the time. And then it...
Wait, now are you doing it on the weekends only? I mean,
baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
What's happening?
Absolutely not. I guess at first it was just on the weekends, but then during that period of time too, I started going out all the time. So I wanted to go. I was going out probably six nights a week sometimes, you know, drinking, which ended up becoming drinking slash using cocaine.
Right.
And that was even when I had to work. So I was working at Channel 5. And, you know, so sometimes, you know, I'd have a crazy night, would manage to pull it all together, go into work, do my thing, get off work. Sometimes I'd even pack a bag, you know, bring it to Channel 5, put it in the dressing room. I'd leave straight from there and go to the bars and start and do it all again.
What was in the bag?
My clothes.
Oh, your clothes. Exactly. Okay,
well,
all right.
Well, but here, I'll tell you this much. So, started out with my bags, just my bags and the clothes, probably over the course of a year or so, then I'm bringing drugs to work. I would literally, you know, we put on makeup. I remember a makeup case that I always carried. I would occasionally slip a bag of cocaine
in my makeup
bag and go in the dressing room before I would go on air, do a little bit, do my job.
What are you thinking as this is all... Are you in denial? Are you thinking, I'm going to get caught? Are you thinking, this is amazing? I can't believe I'm keeping this up?
Part of me is thinking...
Are you thinking nothing?
Well, you're thinking, God, this is... Part of me is thinking, this is crazy. The other part is kind of exhilarating because it was, you know, you're sneaking and because I could still do my job, nobody knows. You know, I could still get on there and I could do my thing and I could still smile. I could still articulate and I could...
And no one, because your performance has not slipped yet.
Nope, it hadn't slipped
did
yet.
Did it ever?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It did. So no one is saying anything.
Nope. Where it started to go downhill, I think I started getting careless. I did start getting careless. And, you know, there was a story.
In what way?
Doing a little too much. You know, in the periods where I would just do a little bit at work, starting to do a lot before work.
And then how would that show up? Physically, in you.
Yeah, you know, look, you perspire sometimes much more. So you look a little kind
sweaty.
Of disheveled. You look a little sweaty. You look distracted. Your eyes are a little maybe bloodshot because in addition to cocaine, I was drinking a lot. And so I didn't have much sleep. Sometimes a little jittery.
Mm-hmm.
One time I remember some story I was doing, you know, just outside of St. Louis. And we were out on a story. I had cocaine with me. Was going to go do it in a bathroom. Had a photographer with me. Photographer, I think, was, we had some dinner, some lunch. I go in the bathroom and was about to do a little cocaine and walk back out of the bathroom. And I think I did do some. Walked back out, got back to the table, and realized I left a bag of cocaine in this bathroom. And I think I had my Channel 5, my jacket on. It, you know, so people who knew who I was knew who I was representing. And the drug addict in me at that time literally was sitting at that table thinking, should I go back in there and go get this? That bag of cocaine, or should I just leave? And I went back in and went and looked for it.
And was it there?
And it was there.
Oh, wow.
I went back in, got it. And
you just said something, the drug addict in me.
Yeah. Yeah.
When did you, you might have said that to yourself then, maybe you didn't, but at what point did you realize I am addicted? Are you sitting in jail when you realize that or no?
Probably, yeah. Because, you know, the switch, I just switched from the cocaine to meth and just kept going, thinking I had some issues, but I always wrapped it under the being social umbrella that, you know, this is, I'm just being social. I'm just, you know, just
doing, and you still were feeling good, even though you were tired and bloodshot eyes?
Well, for the most part, but toward the latter part of my time at Channel 5, when I was saying I was slipping a little bit, is that, you know, I was always great at what I did, but I started showing up late for work.
Mm.
I, you know, was unprepared. There was a time that I got suspended from Channel 5 because I think I may not have had to been at work until like maybe 1:30 in the afternoon. I was sleeping. I think that was one occasion. I was sleeping. They had to send the police to my house to do a welfare check on me.
Because you were
because,
how late?
I think we had a meeting at maybe 2 o'clock or 2:30. I wasn't at the meeting. I didn't call. No, I didn't text. You know, I didn't say anything. And it's in the afternoon. And so, you know, at the time I wake up, there's police at my door.
Wow.
Checking on me. And I'm supposed to be at work. Another time.
And you continue to use after that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another time.
Another time, which was the absolute worst. This is when I was the weekend anchor. I was supposed to be at work for my shift to anchor, and I didn't show up.
At all?
No. And I remember the weatherman at that time had to, at the last minute, fill in for me. He's not a news reporter. It was awful.
Right.
They were scrambling because they didn't know what was going on. And
were you, this is a second suspension?
I believe this is a second suspension, if I'm correct.
How many years now have you been at Channel 5 when this is beginning to happen?
Probably 5, I think.
And you lasted for several more years.
Yeah.
And how, so it sounds like you started doing cocaine a year after you arrived.
Yeah, a couple of years.
A couple years after you arrived.
Right.
So
right.
2 years after you arrive, you're doing it for 5 or whatever.
Yeah, and just progressively.
Progressively,
you know, just
a little bit. And then who introduced you to meth? What was the, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Did you hear the judgment? This is not judgment, this is shock.
I know.
So who then and how did you graduate to meth?
I think that was, you know, now it in this latter stage, you know, using the internet, talking to people online and, you know, meeting people and guy who I knew, hey, you want to come hang out? We're hanging out and he's like, hey, I got, you know, some ice, you know, calling it ice, you know,
I've never heard that.
Meth even would sound bad to me,
right.
But yeah, we got some ice, you know, and it's cool. It's a lot of fun, you know, this. And we did stories about meth, but I don't know if I didn't associate it with that or maybe just didn't want to, but it didn't sound as bad. It just sounded like.
Did you know that ice was meth?
Yeah.
Okay, you knew
that.
I
did, but I think in my mind kind of talked it, it made it kind of rationalized it that it's not so bad. You know, this guy's, he's cool, you know, he does it.
Had your circle of friends changed?
No. And within my circle of friends, meth would have been a big no-no. Even the friends that I did cocaine with, most of them didn't do meth. Because meth was, you know, I was seen as you're getting on the fall.
That's in the crack train.
Correct, heroin train.
We got to take a break, and I don't want to, but we have to, on KMOX. Jeff Small is our guest in recounting his years of cocaine use and then now meth use and how it all ended. We will get that story next on KMOX.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
So you're invited, Jeff, to do ice. Jeff Small, our guest on KMOX Profiles. And it's not so bad, you say to yourself, and you do go do that.
Yep, we did it. And I guess mentally, physically, I loved it. It was, you know, it was the kind of the rush, you know, the upper. I mean, so it got you the energy. You felt just aroused. I mean, it was just this.
Are you not late to work anymore now?
Well, at that I didn't switch to meth until after I left Channel 5.
Oh, okay. So what prompted you? What happened at Channel 5?
So it was the culmination of this sloppiness, this culmination of this unreliability.
Yeah.
That made them not renew my contract. And so, and I'd gone all this time with, you know, whether, you know, I'd had multiple contracts at Channel 5, all the other jobs, had multiple contracts. And for the first time in my life, it was like the rug was pulled out from under me. And I didn't know what to do.
And that could have been a wake-up call, but it was not.
Nope. It wasn't a wake-up call. It sent me into a whole spiral.
Yeah.
I was depressed. I was embarrassed, you know, because the people, even people I worked with in Channel 5, they knew I had some issues. They didn't know exactly what, but they knew I, you know, for some reason, this guy's just not.
Was there no one you were talking to there?
No.
On that deeper level?
No.
What is your mother seeing? What is your grandmother seeing? What are your relatives seeing?
They didn't get it. They didn't get it. They're like, well, Jeff White, you're so good. You know, you're so good at TV. Why wouldn't they renew your contract?
And they had no idea.
No.
You showed up around them at family dinners, you're cleaned up and you're together.
Yeah, I could pull it together. Yeah. Looking back now, I worked just as hard at trying to keep it together. I mean, that became a job. Just, you know, how do you keep it from people? How do you find the time to do it? I mean, that was work in and of itself.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, now that I'm not there, I have all this time on my hand. And, you know, so it's more time to be online. It's more time to
do math.
And
how are you affording it at this point?
I was spending money I didn't have. I mean, I walked away with some money, but just as it was with cocaine, you start spending, you know, extra money, then you start spending a little bit more.
Yeah.
Then you start spending bill money.
You're going into debt.
Going into debt.
Yeah. Because you did the bankruptcy that you had to file.
Yeah.
Was that behind this behavior?
It was. Because, you know, I even had I bought a house at one point, and kind of right at the beginning stages of my cocaine use, when I was just wasting money on drugs and stuff like that, and lost the house. I had a wreck, and I had a brand new car coming from the east side one night, high, drunk, wrecked, totaled my car. I probably should have been dead. Walked away from that car accident, and in fact, walked away from the car. I literally left the car sitting on the bridge because, the car, I think I let my, I was so wrecked. My insurance had lapsed on the car.
Oh my goodness.
I still owed $20,000 on the car. I certainly didn't want a police officer to come there and, you know, attribute this to my drug use. I had a friend come pick me up from this bridge. I'm like, just come get me.
Wow.
Come get me. And I left. Never looked back at that car. So that car was probably the biggest thing on my bankruptcy that I've tried to get off my record. Yeah.
And so the time that you're arrested, that now this comes to light and we all know now what is going on. What was that day?
That day I went out that night to driving a car that had a bad headlight. Buddy, you know, didn't live very far from me, who I would frequently do meth with. I don't know if I hit him up or he hit me up. Hey, come hang out. Let's smoke. Sure. I knew I was driving this car with a bad headlight. It's at nighttime, which is obviously kind of red flag. He stopped by police. But again, because the drugs were talking, I said, sure, let's go. Went over his house, smoked, got really high. And I was wearing a fanny pack. And in that fanny pack had paraphernalia. I left his house with some drugs, with some meth. Had some meth. I even had some old bags of meth that I'd used before. So I had just this stash of stuff on me. Get in my car, driving back down. Police officer spots me for the headlight, pulls me over. Because I was so high and really just out of it, I get out of my car, talking to the officer just like I'm talking to you.
Did he ask you to get out of your car?
No, I got out of the car.
You
on my
got
out.
Okay,
yeah.
Now you're foolish.
Yeah,
you've been foolish a long time.
Correct.
Okay.
But yeah, almost an arrogance in my mind that I'm going to talk my way out of this.
Yeah.
And be on my way. Not even thinking about the fact that at that time, I had probably 6 warrants out for my arrest.
For what?
Crazy traffic stuff, but still.
Speeding.
They're warrants.
And, okay.
Yeah. But 6 warrants for probably 6 different places. Normandy, Berkeley, Arnold, Maplewood.
Because you hadn't been paying any bills.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, so you weren't paying tickets.
Nope, that was the last of my priorities. And so when I get stopped, you know, and they were, you know, it was just a bad broken headlight. So, you know, not a big deal. He's gonna could have written me a warning, but then he, you know, asked to, let me just run your stuff and I'll get you on your way.
When that was it.
That was it. And my car wasn't even registered in my name. I mean,
stolen car for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just who am I? you would think, but
he runs it, comes back. You got warrants taking you in.
Yep. And he says, "I'm gonna have to search you."
That was it.
I didn't even. I'm so high. I didn't even realize. Oh, I had this fanny pack on me. Even if I was in my right mind. Even high, maybe I could have thrown, somebody else would have said, oh, let me get rid of these drugs. Let me hide them. Nope. It's right on me. I'm wearing it.
So he searched you and the car.
Searched me and the car.
And found
the drugs. And, right there, it was just, this flash went before my, like, oh, my God.
Did you think at that moment, it's over? Or were you still thinking, I can get out of this somehow?
I thought it was over. I mean, there was one part of me was thinking, maybe if they don't know who I am, if they don't figure out, put two and two together who I am, I'll get a charge, get a lawyer and move on. But, this is where it comes back to bite me again of who I am.
Yeah.
Surely somebody, if you run my name, somebody's like, wait a minute, I know that name.
Right. Because you had been gone from Channel 5 for how long at this point?
Oh, shoot, I was 18, left. Oh, since 2011. I've been on TV in a very long time. But I'm still a very recognizable face, name.
So they take you to jail?
They take me to jail. I've never been to jail before. Just putting on handcuffs and I'm going to jail. So many things running through my mind. I get to jail. And I mean, even when I get to jail, people that work there, so I don't know, bailiffs, but jail staff recognize me. I mean, so I'm embarrassed from the start when I get there. These people know who I am. And then what happened was because they had to send the drugs off to be tested for proof that it was, in fact, drugs, the charges initially, they were just really holding me, and my arrest was for the warrants.
Right, okay.
So, I think I was held for maybe 24 hours, and then there was this kind of a respite period where where nothing happened.
They're waiting for the drug test to come back.
So then when that came, and I think it was a call I got from somebody saying, oh, my God, Jeff, I just saw their story. If it was online or on TV, they're like, you're in the news today. And I'm like, what? Like, busted for meth.
So you didn't even get a call from police.
No.
They didn't come and arrest you.
I think I had to turn myself back in. I think it was so I had to go back.
But you'll find out in the news.
Yeah.
But you knew.
Right.
It
was a matter.
Yeah, I mean, you knew.
By that time, I'd secured an attorney, and you kind of informed me what the process will be.
Wait a minute. When did you tell your mother?
Not until after the stuff hit the news. I mean, I was.
So wait, you are arrested.
Yeah.
Held for 24 hours.
Yeah.
They're testing drugs. You're out. And your mother doesn't know.
Yeah.
So she also finds out in the news.
Yep,
Shame on you.
Yeah, I know. I was just hoping, praying that, again.
Somehow.
I'll just go to jail, get a court day, do whatever legally, and just this doesn't get out. It was the addict in me. It was the drugs. Because even in that period, I'm sure I went and got high again.
I was absolutely going to ask you. So before you turn yourself in, were still getting high.
Absolutely.
And so you do turn yourself in.
Yep.
You are charged.
Yep.
You plead.
I don't remember if you pleaded again.
Do you serve time?
No. So we basically, because I secured an attorney, there's a whole process of discovery. They had to actually give us information that they had. And at that time, again, the drugs in me I was just in defensive mode. I wanted to, even when people say, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And, we're going to fight it. I was just being in defensive mode. I wasn't at that mode or that mindset of accepting it and confronting. No, absolutely not. I didn't want people to think I had a, just like, hey, you think of other celebrities that get arrested with drugs in their car and they can, say, oh, it wasn't mine. And so I was thinking in my mind, that's the approach I'm going to do. It wasn't mine.
Wow.
Why am I wearing this fanny pack though?
Yeah.
I don't know how I'm going to try to explain it, but my mind just said, no, just plan on fighting it. Just plan on fighting it. And then through more and more meetings with my attorney and other people who are concerned about me, like, Jeff, maybe there's a way to do this where you can get some help.
Yeah.
And, you know, deal with these charges.
But that means admitting.
Yeah, that means admitting.
Yeah.
And by the time that my attorney did present the option of drug court, you know, even when he told me, he said, this is not a program for chumps. You know, this drug court is very difficult. You know, basically the court, you know, St. Louis City, you know, once you sign the dotted line and say that, yes, I agree to be a part of this program. If you will let me in this program, I agree to do any and all things to comply with this program. And that meant I was drug tested 4 to 5 days a week, every single week, randomly. Individual counseling, group counseling. I had to go to NA meetings, and sometimes all this in the same week.
Oh, wow.
I had to keep a job. You know, my life became drug court. And you could not use, obviously. And even
do you have withdrawals? Are you?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
What's going on?
I'll tell you what.
With your health,
there were times when I first entered in the drug court program, when I would go into court to face the judge, I was high then. I was when I tell you how addiction is, I was still getting high. You know, even though I knew I was going to get drug tested, it was probably going to come up positive, and I would face punishments because of that, which could include, in drug court, in the beginning of drug court, I spent probably at most 3 nights in jail for...
Because you kept failing tests.
I was failing tests and not doing the things that would prevent me from going
back.
What
turned it around?
I think it was a point when I told my counselor, you know, that I guess I just didn't really face the fact that underneath this arrest thing, you know, I was just dealing with depression, and I didn't love myself. I remember sitting with my counselor one day, and I said, you know what? The hardest thing for me is to accept the fact that I stopped loving myself. You know, that this person that I used to be so proud of, the person I could look in the mirror and just say, gosh, I love Jeff. You know, Jeff is awesome. And no, I didn't love Jeff anymore. And, you know, and then we began not just focusing on my drug use, but those underlying things. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we tackle those things? How do we get your self-esteem back?
Right.
How do we get you to love you and see your self-worth?
Think that you're valuable.
Think
you're worthy.
You're valuable.
Yeah.
And see that you're, really see what these drugs are doing to your life, where you can say, hold on, is this really what you want with your life?
This is not worth it.
Yeah. Are these people who you have in your life, are they really helping you? Are they really your friends? Are these places you go? Do you have to go to those places? And look what you're doing to your, not only yourself, but your parents, your jobs,
did you then separate from all of those people?
Absolutely. I went, you know, they tell you you have to change people, places, and things.
Mm.
And it sounds, man, kind of cliche, but it literally meant that, in that people, I literally at one point had people, had numbers in my phone, hundreds, you know, under different labels, Ice Joe, Ice Matt, which meant that's my connection for drugs, either somebody that I would buy drugs from, somebody I would do drugs with, somebody I partied with, that I could just text at a given moment, or I might get a random text, hey, you want to hang out? Boom, that meant I was off and running.
And you got rid of all those?
So I literally would go, I went through my phone, delete, block, or block, delete, block, delete, and it took a while. Like, I went through everybody. If I had a connection to you through that, no more. Same thing with social media, because I had people, we talk like that on Facebook, on social media.
Wow.
You know, so I had to do social media. You know, any site, any avenue that I had to connect with someone from that lifestyle, or that I knew could get me drugs, or that might offer me,
delete,
block.
And is that something they told you in drug court you needed to do?
Oh, yeah.
People, places, and things.
Yep. And I even, I resisted that for a while, because in my drug addict mind told me, well, they were your friend, too. And they were real nice. Y'all hung out. You know, you guys hung out. And
You had fun.
And you know, you just think that drug addict said, well, you know, you might want to, you know, you might need that number at some point. So I resisted that for a long time.
How long was drug court?
Oh, almost 2 years.
Wow.
It was just under, yeah. I was in drama.
Because you just completed it.
Just completed. I think I went in, so my arrest was in January. I think I began drug court in maybe March.
And I don't think I had any idea that drug court was that long.
It can be. There's a minimum, but when you start breaking the rules and not complying,
you just add to your time.
And you added to the time. Yeah, I went in with the mindset, oh yeah, I'm going to get in here, do everything
knock
right.
It out.
But as I just said, I didn't. I was still getting high.
Can you tell me the time? Are you face to face with your mother when you do finally tell her?
Yeah.
What was that like? I've had conversations with my own mama. Yeah. I was in tears. I understand.
Oh, it was the absolute most humiliating, scary, just low feeling of my life. Just having to admit to my mother that I'm not just a drug addict. I'm a crystal meth addict. I'm a cocaine addict. I'm sort of this son that you knew, but I've done, you know, I got real with it. I'm like, I've done drugs at your house.
Oh my, oh.
Wow. I've done drugs at my father's house. I've done drugs at my job. I've done, you know, and I just laid it all out to her. I felt as difficult as it was talking to my mother. I also knew the flip side of that, being my mother, she wasn't going anywhere.
Right.
It was going to be a long road to walk, but I knew she was going to walk with me.
And she did.
Same thing for, my squad of close friends and another family who I got real with, you know, and because I lost some people along the way. Absolutely lost some people, some friends who, it was a little too much for them. But the people.
Are you okay with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely now.
You have to be.
I recognize now, I can't, they made the decisions they made for them, what was okay with them, and then who knows what was behind it. Maybe it was a little too close for some reason. Maybe they had some issues with themselves.
Yeah, not for us to think,
right,
yeah.
Right, so. It is what it is. And I, even some people who are close to me, who stayed on my team, I guess I'd say, they gave me tough love.
Yeah.
During this period, you know, just said, hey, we will stay by your side if you are serious about getting help. If you're really taking the street, if you're not, no more lip service.
Yeah.
Because a lot, you know, I want to get help. But are you really taking the steps to get help? Are you just hearing stuff or are you listening? Are you actively trying to help yourself?
And so we have heard, I think it's common to believe that once an addict, always an addict. And is that you?
I think I'm not an expert on addiction, but I do know I will always have to put in the work to maintain a clean lifestyle. I don't think I will be one of those people who just say, oh, I will never ever think about drugs and I will never have to go to a meeting. Nope.
Can you not even drink?
During the program, I couldn't.
Right.
And that was not my problem.
Some people say they do things in tandem.
Right. No.
It becomes a habit too.
No. I think my problem was
the cocaine. Well,
even this is that I had to recognize that, unlike some of the people who I did cocaine or meth with, who could just do a little bit and they could be a functioning addict. Mm-hmm. That wasn't me. I was that person. I was built in a way that if I did a little bit, I want a lot. Mm. If I spend $50 for a little bit, you better believe 2 hours later, I'm coming back to spend $100 now. Because that's how I'm wired. And I had to accept that I can't do what everybody or some other user do, I guess.
How are you still counseling? Are you still in therapy? Are you?
Yeah. So so once I left drug court, but, you know, by the time I, you know, graduated from drug court, the worst part was I had gotten past the worst part. You know, it was no longer a desire of mine. It was nothing I wanted. It wasn't even about the drug court. I was happy to get drugs. Like, let's test me. You know, I was ready. You know, please test me. And I had already made up my mind that this is not about the judge. This is not about the court system. I've reclaimed my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I absolutely love myself again. And I think over the last few months, it physically showed. You know, I would post different pictures and people say, you know what? I see you again. Yeah. I see that
smile. You look
smile.
Better now than you did then.
Thank you. I literally, because, you know, over the last 2 years in the early part, when I would go places, because I always had different positions or different jobs where I was still facing people who would say, hey, aren't you? And I literally would want to crawl under a rock. I mean, there were times that I would just break out in tears, you know, and some people I'm sure thought I was crazy. Like, why is this man crying? But it hurt me so bad for somebody to recognize, because I didn't know what they were going to mm-hmm, say afterwards. Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. a couple of times some people did say, well, are you staying out of trouble? Or I mean, just some things that just threw me like, oh my goodness. But over the last few months, or really last year, when somebody would say, hey, aren't you? Yep, I sure am. And I could walk with my head held high and ready for whatever they might say. Because I was happy to say, yes, I did that. I did get in trouble. But here's what I did about it.
Yeah.
I nobody made me go to drug court. I voluntarily agreed to put myself out there and do whatever I had to do.
Because people do say no to drug court.
Oh, absolutely.
People say no.
I will tell you, during my duration of drug court, there are people I know who died, who I know one person graduated from drug court, went right back out and got back in the drug lifestyle, ended up dead.
Oh,
another girl who I started a program with, she's one of the first people I met in drug court, died under some drug-related circumstances.
Wow.
I mean, this is real. And that's the thing, you know, while I was in drug court, the longer I stayed, I saw mothers, fathers, young mothers and fathers. I saw a nurse. I saw people from so many different backgrounds. And I came in contact with people who, you know, were living these secret lives just like me. They were going home to a wife who had no idea they were an addict. They might have drove a school bus. So they're driving your kids. Mm. You don't have any idea who this person is. This person might be high as a kite taking your kids to school. This, you know, at one point I remember doing meth with a school principal who was still a principal and doing meth.
Let me ask you this about that, though, because everyone, just like I, viscerally is going to react like, oh, my God, a principal, you know, a police officer, just a mom, you got kids at home, what is going on? I think that our reaction, we get stuck in the shock and, oh, no, not you. It couldn't possibly be you because of the job you have. Mm-hmm. And then we don't know how to help. We are not putting the resources in that we should to mm-hmm. help people. It shouldn't have nothing to do with what you do for a living.
No, it shouldn't. And even...
Our shock anyway.
Right. Yeah. It's shocking, but I think, you know, just in particular with the meth, again, back to like the stigma associated with that can just be so, the addict knows that, you know, what will people think? And, you know, it's not just like if I was a stoner and say, oh, he's got he smokes too much weed or, again, you know, does a little cocaine, but this is a meth addict. And, you know, so they're afraid to tell someone, you know, because they're thinking, well, I might lose my job. You know, here's my job. My marriage will be over.
You got to cover it up.
Yeah. So you work to cover it up. And, you know, even it was something so disturbing to me. I remember when I got arrested, there were people who hit me up and said, man, you know, you're black. Black people don't do meth. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I had said, I had that from several people. And I'm like,
and were they black people saying that?
Yeah,
or white
there
people?
Were black people. But in my mind,
we think it's rare.
But in my mind, I'm thinking, does that make it better? That meth doesn't, or you know, it's not delegated to one particular race, or it doesn't make it better if it would have been younger. Oh, I mean, the meth is an equal opportunity destructor.
Yeah.
It's I always hear people say that, you know, it's that friend who, you know, gives you the biggest hug, but has a dagger that, like, as he's hugging you, just stabbing you.
Oh my
you know,
goodness.
like a friend who picks you up in the car and says, man, let's go hang out. Now I'm about to drive over this cliff over here. You know, we're going to have a ball.
Mm.
But I'm going to drive you over this cliff over here. Let's roll. Let's go have fun. Or I think of meth as that friend who picks you up and says, hey, we're going to hang out tonight. Now, you're going to cheat on your wife tonight, but we're going to have a ball. It's going to be so much fun. Or, you know, I know you got to work in the morning, but tonight it is going to be on. We're going to have so much, you know, this this sick way of thinking, you know, again, like...
And we say yes to it.
Yeah. And, yeah. you know, in my addiction, in a typical, you know, addict's state of mind, everything else becomes secondary to meth.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, I chose meth over my family. I chose meth over my career. I chose meth over... I would get up early sometimes just to make time to do meth. You know, I'm not an early riser, but I was sure I could get up 2 hours early to go do meth. Yeah, I would skip my lunch. I didn't eat. I've stayed up literally 2 and 3 days in a row.
Wow.
Sometime. I've always been a skinny guy. Usually, you know, around 155 or so. I got down to like 140 before. So it's for a thin guy, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't eating. There's a medication that I take. I would skip my medication because I forget. You know, I'd skip out on family.
So you gave up on yourself.
Oh, yeah. I'd skip out on family functions.
How are you surviving now? I know, I believe you've been modeling.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So how are you making a living now?
Yeah. So I've worked, even in my craziness and the rest and stuff, about 7 years ago, found my way into a career as a brand ambassador, product specialist. So, you know, I've represented products and events, you name it. I've been from Wheel of Fortune to the Army, just all these amazing Coca-Cola. It was kind of a niche that I just stumbled on that I think my, I don't know, kind of charisma or whatever, maybe the way I look in some cases has helped me. And I made it work. And so, amid my stuff that I would just kind of get high before or after work, I became successful at this other stuff and kept doing it, you know, until the wheels just fell off. But yeah, that's what I started doing. And
are you still doing that?
Yeah, I am. And
are you making a living?
Yeah,
are you okay?
I am. And I also I'm also a concierge at a local business that is a full time job, benefits, and you know, is an awesome job.
Do you miss TV?
Yes, I would be lying to you if I say that I didn't miss parts of the career that I once had, because again, I think I was good at what I did.
And, you were?
And I think there's a lot I miss. I miss the camaraderie, and I think it's only because the closer I got to finishing drug court and getting myself together that I started thinking, I still have those abilities. People still like to hear me talk, and I'm a good writer. And I made up my mind that if I'm able to get myself together, if and when I finish drug court, I'm going to put myself back out there. I'm not going to just get myself together and just, you know, hey, get clean and just go on about life. But nope, you know.
You're going to try to reclaim what you lost.
Yep. And I really began conversations with God about, I have a purpose, you know, and I have this voice that can, not literally voice, but I have this story, this struggle, this redemption, this spirit of overcoming, this mm-hmm. this drive now that makes me want to use it for good.
Right.
You know, I was splashed all over for bad, but I'm like, you know what? Let me show what is possible.
Yeah.
Let me reach somebody else, because I'm not the only one. There are so many people who I think are out there who just, I literally talked to a guy today who saw my post on Facebook, and he's someone I used drugs with before, who had told me he had been clean, but he hit me up and he said, can you help me? Will you help me? Tell me how you did what you did. And instead of my lunch break, I spent the time talking to him.
Mm.
I've already agreed to speak to a recovery meeting coming up. I'm going to speak at another graduation for drug court. You know, I'm literally making this my, you know, whatever career thing happens on down the road, we'll see where it takes me. But I know that beside that, I have a purpose. I have the ability to help somebody, to help a lot of somebody.
Yes.
That people need to hear my struggle, and I want to be as transparent as possible, because I want people to understand the ugliness behind this addiction.
The
I want
risk.
People to know the risks, just the depths of darkness that this addiction and addiction in general will take you. But I also think it's just as important for people to know that there's light at the end of this tunnel, even for people who are dealing with a loved one who are in this addiction. I want to be an encouragement to that person too. There is no magic solution for, you know, right. the I did drug court. There are other avenues to go, but I think people just at least need to know that help is available. Recovery is real. People do make it out, no matter how deep the darkness is.
And no matter how popular and or well-known
or
wealthy.
It can happen to anybody. And just like with me, that little ounce of curiosity, that little thing that says, let me try it, can get you hooked. And in this day and age, you know, you might get arrested. You might lose your job, or you might get killed. You might kill yourself. Because in my darkness of after the arrest and things like that, there were thoughts of in my mind of, is this really worth moving on with this life, Jeff? Why don't you get high, end it all? And I think just because of the way I was raised and, you know, my belief system, I couldn't ever go forward with killing myself, but I sure wanted to. Yeah. I sure felt like, what am I going to do? How can I ever get my life back? And fast forward to where I am now, my God, you know, I'm overjoyed. I'm at peace. I'm so, so passionate. I mean, I'm a private person, but to be where we are now, talking to you, sharing this story, this is what I think I was meant to do.
And you love yourself again.
Absolutely.
Well, Jeff, I am so grateful that you decided to come and to talk, because I absolutely know that people will hear this and they will be moved.
Thank you.
I know that will happen.
Thank
Anytime you.
You
put yourself out there, you know, God uses all of this and is using all that you went through,
yep.
you know, for his glory, as we say.
I
you and I
it.
Are both church babies. So.
Yes,
yeah.
yes, yes.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining me.
It was my pleasure. My pleasure.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.